The following is a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly presentation exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is sponsored by the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network.
Good morning. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. I am your host, Dr. Carol Smith, Commissioner of Health and Mental Health for Ulster County. With me this morning is my co-host, Vin Martello, our Director of Community Health Relations. Good morning, Vin.
Good morning, Dr. Smith. How are you today?
Thanks.
Dr. Smith, today our topic is one that's very important and one that many people have heard of, I'm sure, and that is HIV/AIDS and sexually transmitted infections. We're very fortunate to have with us today Dr. Michael Sherin. He practices internal medicine with the Medical Associates of the Hudson Valley in Kingston. He's Vice President of the Medical Staff of Health Alliance Hospital. He's treated a wide variety of medical conditions throughout his career with a particular interest in the treatment of HIV. He's a regional champion for Mount Sinai Hospital's Clinical Education Initiative, which is a New York State funded grant that trains healthcare providers in the treatment and prevention of HIV infection. And he worked in New York City before that with the St. Vincent's Hospital in Manhattan, as well as the director of St. Vincent's Hospital AIDS Scatterbed Services. So welcome, Dr. Sherin. How are you?
Welcome. I'm well, thank you.
Dr. Sherin, before we discuss details and statistics, can you give our listeners a non-technical explanation of what HIV/AIDS is?
Okay. Well, HIV is a virus which attacks lymphocytes, a type of white blood cell in the bloodstream. It is spread, generally speaking, through sexual transmission, although also it can be spread directly through blood exposure, as well as from mother to unborn child, or actually during the childbirth process to the baby, which are the primary ways that it's spread. Once in the system, if left untreated, what it does is it attacks these lymphocytes in the body, specifically something called a T cell or a CD4 cell, and over time depletes them. Once that happens to a far enough degree, once the T cell count gets low enough, what happens is the individual becomes susceptible to infections. Where it is when the infection has progressed to the point where the immune system is no longer functioning up to par and can no longer fight off infections.
Are there many people in Ulster County that are living with HIV/AIDS?
The most recent statistics available from the Department of Health of New York State, which were published in December 2016, show that there are currently 447 people in Ulster County known to be living with HIV infection.
And can you tell me a little bit more about them? Or is it confined to a particular ethnic group or population, or is it pretty much across the spectrum?
It's pretty much spread across the spectrum. The state doesn't give statistics of demographics for each county, but it does give statistics of demographics for the Mid-Hudson region, which includes Ulster County as well as the surrounding counties. So I presume that our statistics are not that different, or our demographics are not that different from those of the surrounding counties. Basically, two-thirds of the people living with HIV/AIDS in the Mid-Hudson region are male, and one-third are female. In terms of how the infection was acquired, about 32% are men who have sex with men, about 20% acquired the infection through injection drug use, and 35% are felt to have acquired the infection through heterosexual sex.
Mm-hmm. You know, back when I was in training, and we were still just trying to understand what this strange phenomenon was of HIV and why people were showing up with various kinds of infections that we didn't see before. And, you know, it really is very much a story that has evolved over the last 20, 30 years. We went from a time when we were not even naming what was going on, we were trying to figure it out, to now people are living relatively fulfilling healthy lives with HIV, with the assistance of various medications, various drug combinations, and it's no longer a death sentence as it used to be at one point in time. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. The current antiviral agents that are out there can suppress the virus to the point that it's really not even detectable in the bloodstream by normal blood testing. Once that happens, the virus is then no longer able to destroy the immune system. The immune system will build itself back up. I mean, I have probably about 120 HIV positive patients in my practice, and I could say they're almost all extremely healthy. The oldest patient I have is 82 years old and was tested HIV positive back in 1987. So he's 31 years out that he's known of, and he estimates that he's been positive even a few years prior to that. So with today's treatment, people can live normal lifespans.
Which is a huge difference from what it was 20, 30 years ago.
Oh gosh, when I first started doing this at St. Vincent's in 1992, I mean, it was like living in a war zone. I mean,
was
this
was
right in Manhattan and Greenwich Village, and it was a death sentence. You would watch people, despite your best efforts, deteriorate and die, or you'd get them from one crisis to the next. You treat one complication, one infection, then they'd come 6 months later with another serious infection, and you know, it was kind of like trying to plug up a sinking boat.
Right. And so, but it really speaks to how much effort has gone into the science of understanding the disease and coming up with the kinds of antiviral treatments that can help people live normal lives. And it's, well, normal in the terms of normal lifespan. You know, it does speak too to the need for people, if they have any question, to go ahead and be tested. The fear in the past was not wanting to know because you thought that there was nothing that could be done.
Right, yeah.
Now that there are treatments available, it certainly behooves somebody that if they're concerned about that to have the treatment, to have the testing done.
And it goes beyond that, right, Dr. Sherman, in that it's moved now to a prevention modality, correct? Could you tell us about that?
Well, there's two ways to look at it. One way is if someone is on treatment and their viral load is undetectable, they have such low levels of virus in their bloodstream that it is virtually impossible for them, at least through sexual contact, to transmit the virus to other people. This concept is known as U equals U, or undetectable equals untransmittable. And as a matter of fact, the Centers for Disease Control in November of last year, of 2017, actually issued a statement saying that based on thousands of couples that had been studied, of serodiscordant couples, where one is positive and one is negative, that they really said if the HIV-positive patient had an undetectable viral load, was well suppressed on treatment, it was virtually impossible for them to pass it to their partner, which, you know, from a public health standpoint is extremely important. It means if we can really identify everyone who's positive, get them on treatment, get their viral loads undetectable, theoretically we can really end transmission and actually end the epidemic.
Well, that's something that the governor recently proposed to develop a plan to end the epidemic of AIDS in New York.
Yeah, in 2014, Governor Cuomo announced a three-point strategy for ending the HIV AIDS epidemic in New York by 2020. And essentially, there's three main pillars to the point. The first being, as I said, identifying through expanded testing everyone who is positive, you know, which really means to destigmatize testing, get people tested, not just sort of focus testing efforts on those who are traditionally thought to be at high risk, but really just test widely and get people who are undiagnosed to know that they're positive. You know, for one, they'll most likely change behavior and, you know, not put people at risk. But the second part of the plan is to then link these people to care, get them treated, get their viral load suppressed to undetectable so that they do become basically non-transmitters of virus. And the third pillar of the plan is to treat people who are negative but are at high risk. People whose behaviors are putting them at high risk for HIV can be treated actually with preventive medication to stop them from getting HIV. This is called PrEP, or pre-exposure prophylaxis, and this is now being promoted as a way for high-risk individuals to keep themselves from becoming positive.
And what is that treatment modality? What is involved with that?
The treatment PrEP basically is only one agent that's approved for PrEP. It's actually two medications in one pill. It goes by the brand name Truvada. It's two antiretrovirals that would be included as part of treatment for HIV as well. HIV is usually treated with a minimum of three drugs, but for prevention purposes, it's two drugs in one. And it's given on a daily basis or taken on a daily basis. And studies have shown that it is extremely effective at preventing an at-risk individual from actually acquiring HIV infection. Now, this is supposed to be in addition to other protections, and you know, especially for sexual protection, for you to use barrier protection, i.e., condoms, would still be recommended. It's just an additional layer of protection, or a layer of protection for people who are not consistently able to use condoms or do other methods of prevention.
And just out of curiosity, we know that other types of viruses evolve and morph and mutate. Has that ever been an issue with HIV/AIDS?
You're talking about for HIV treatment
in other words, you have a treatment or a prevention modality, but is there any worry that it could morph into something else that would not be protected?
That is a theoretical concern, because mm-hmm. certainly there are strains of virus that are resistant to some of the treatments. Mm-hmm. And the main way people who are HIV positive develop resistance to treatment is that they are taking medications inconsistently or, you know, at lower than prescribed doses. And this can select out resistant strains of the virus. Right. So theoretically, even if somebody is on PrEP, if they are exposed to a virus that is resistant to the two drugs that are in PrEP, theoretically they can acquire a resistant virus. So far, that has not been seen. There are really not case reports of people on PrEP acquiring resistant virus. Mm-hmm. So while it is a theoretical concern, it does not seem to be playing out in actual, you know, mm-hmm. practice.
Well, we'd like to learn more about this, plus more about some of the other sexually transmitted infections. But first, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio.
The heart is a complex organ, but finding specialized cardiovascular care in Poughkeepsie and Kingston is so easy. Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospital are now home to WMC Health's Heart and Vascular Institute, the Hudson Valley's largest multi-specialty cardiovascular practice. They have state-of-the-art diagnostics and innovative imaging and testing technologies. You'll receive comprehensive cardiac and vascular care from some of the world's top cardiologists and vascular surgeons. You'll also have a seamless connection to advanced care at WMC Health's flagship hospital, Westchester Medical Center. The best cardiovascular care comes from the best people, and now the very best are right in your backyard. Visit wmchealth.org/heart to discover more about WMC Health's Heart and Vascular Institute at Mid-Hudson Regional Hospital and Health Alliance Hospital, members of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network. WMC Health, advancing care here.
Welcome back. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Our special guest today is Dr. Michael Sherin, who's an internist practicing in Ulster County, who subspecializes in STDs, including HIV, AIDS, gonorrhea, syphilis, chlamydia, among others. Earlier in the first part of the show, Dr. Sherin, you mentioned high-risk behaviors. Would you elaborate a little bit more on what do you mean by that in 2018?
Okay. Well, when we're talking about high-risk behavior for acquiring HIV infection, again, the two primary modes of acquisition of HIV in the United States have been sexual contact or injection drug use, although injection drug use has actually fallen way down as a means of transmission. So for sexual behavior, first of all, men who have sex with men are clearly at higher risk of acquiring HIV than is the heterosexual population. Statistically, at least 2/3 of new infections occur among this population. But other risks are multiple sexual partners and particularly unprotected sex, sex without any sort of barrier protection, such, you know, specifically condom use.
Well, certainly that could contribute to why we're seeing the increase in chlamydia and gonorrhea and syphilis. Condoms will help prevent multiple sexually transmitted diseases. So certainly the thought is that we should certainly still encourage that, and as a means of preventing some of these other STDs, which could certainly lead to such things as infertility and other problems as the individual grows older.
Now, does age and socioeconomic factors, do they play into this?
Well, I don't have statistics on socioeconomics, but certainly chlamydia is very frequently seen in the younger populations. And, you know, in our county, close to a third of all cases of chlamydia and gonorrhea occurring in the 20 to 29-year-old age group. So clearly younger age, whether that is just simply a reflection of more sexual activity at that age or more risk-taking sexual activity at that age is unclear. But that's, you know, clearly we do see it in younger populations disproportionately to older populations.
Mm-hmm. And are there... is it routine in your practice and others for physicians to have those kinds of discussions by way of preventative education and awareness with patients?
I mean, theoretically, it certainly should be part of primary care to discuss sexual health and risk of sexual transmitted diseases. A lot of physicians don't. They're reticent. It can be awkward. So it's, you know, while in theory we are all taught as physicians that the sexual history is a very important part of care, I think it's not done as much as it should be. However, screening certainly can be done as part of a routine GYN exam. It's quite easy to do. And gonorrhea and chlamydia are quite easily tested for with a simple urine specimen now. It's not like the old days where you had to have a swab placed in the urethra or anything invasive. So it certainly can be done as part of healthcare screening. Syphilis is simply a blood test.
Mm-hmm. And what other... preventative measures do you recommend in terms of how to mitigate the increases that we've seen in Ulster County and other places?
Well, again, condom use is by far and away the most effective method other than, you know, abstinence or limiting the number of sexual partners you have. But short of that, barrier protection is quite important, which is why even when we talked about PrEP earlier, the pill mm-hmm. that you can take to help decrease the chance of acquiring HIV, it's very important to stress that this does not in any way decrease the chances of acquiring other sexually transmitted diseases, and that barrier protection is still of the utmost importance for preventing those infections.
Mm-hmm. Are the STDs, are they all virus-based infections, or are they a mix of bacteriological and virus?
No, gonorrhea is a bacteria. Chlamydia mm-hmm. is an intracellular bacteria. Syphilis is a specific type of bacteria called a spirochete, mm-hmm. which is actually, interestingly enough, the same family that Lyme disease
right.
is. So most of them are not viral. Herpes is viral, and papillomavirus, which causes genital warts and also puts people at risk for cervical cancer, or to some extent also penile cancer, that is a virus.
Mm-hmm. And of course, now we have a vaccine for
yes.
HPV. Do you routinely recommend that to do you see as patients in that age group?
Well, I treat adults. So, mm-hmm. The HPV vaccine, there's an age cutoff in the mid-20s for males and females. I think it's slightly different for males than for females. But so most people who come to me are already beyond the cutoff age for the HPV vaccine. But I'm a strong believer in the HPV vaccine. I mean, this is a vaccine that theoretically can prevent people from getting cancer. So, mm-hmm. I believe strongly in it.
Is that the only one of the group that is vaccine preventable, or others in that as well?
HPV is the only STD that I'm aware of that has any vaccine prevention.
Mm-hmm. And for the spectrum of STDs, what are the treatment modalities for those? I'm sure it differs a little bit for each one, but can you run that by us?
Well, fortunately, gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis are all curable. There are cases, worldwide reported of antibiotic-resistant strains of gonorrhea, but that's not really become a huge problem in the United States yet. But in general, chlamydia is treated with a pill. It's treated with azithromycin. Gonorrhea is usually treated with an intramuscular injection of ceftriaxone.
These are all antibiotics.
These are antibiotics. Mm-hmm. Syphilis is treated with a penicillin antibiotic, mm-hmm. unless the patient is penicillin resistant, in which case you use an alternative treatment. Herpes and HPV, however, are not curable. I mean, that's a chronic viral infection that people have to live with for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. Is herpes what's called an opportunistic virus? Is it the kind of a virus that kind of remains dormant in the system until your immune system depletes?
Well, opportunistic, the technical definition of opportunistic is an infection that will not infect somebody with a normal immune system, mm-hmm. And therefore will only attack people, for example, mm-hmm. with HIV/AIDS or mm-hmm. or who have immune compromise due to immunosuppressive therapy or cancer treatment. So it's not, because anybody can get herpes mm-hmm. simplex, uh-huh. Regardless, even with a perfectly healthy immune system. Herpes simplex is a chronic infection, which is characterized by first an initial infection and then a dormant phase punctuated by reactivations. And reactivations, yes, if your immune system is down for whatever reason, you're more likely to have a reactivation, but it's certainly not a prerequisite for having a reactivation. And, some people will get one reactivation every month, and some will get a reactivation almost never. So it varies a lot, and we're not really sure why that is from person to person.
Uh-huh. And so there's no treatment. So is there any kind?
There's suppressive treatment for herpes simplex. There's valacyclovir and other antivirals that you can take either episodically when you get an attack to shorten the attack, or on a daily basis to decrease the number of reactivations. If you're somebody who has very frequent reactivations, you can go on daily medication to decrease the outbreaks that you have.
Mm-hmm. And are the antibiotic treatments for the others, are they maybe 100% effective is not possible in this world, but are they?
All intents and purposes, you could say 100% effective. Obviously, there will be treatment failures. People may need to be retreated. People also get reinfected, so it's sometimes hard to sort out what's a treatment failure and what's a reinfection, especially if the partner is not treated. But, by and large, we can cure chlamydia, get syphilis, and gonorrhea fairly easily.
Right, but we should also note that that's not a reason for irresponsible behavior. Right?
No, of course not.
But there's always that, I can be cured, it's okay, I don't have to pay so much attention to it.
Well, no. Basically, especially when I talk to people about PrEP, I use a simple analogy that just if you have airbags in your car, that doesn't mean you drive 120 miles an hour. You still have to be cautious, and that's in general in life. It's an added layer of caution, and it's good that these things are curable, but in the interim, you might spread it to somebody else. It can cause certainly social embarrassment. And sometimes you're talking about syphilis. Even if it's treatable, it can present at a stage where there are some significant complications. I've had a patient who had a serious eye infection from syphilis who, basically is visually impaired in one eye for the rest of his life because of it. So, again, there is treatment and cure for these things, it's certainly not something people want to risk acquiring.
Mm-hmm. And not in all cases are these diseases symptomatic. There are times when they go unnoticed by way of symptoms. So the disease can be in the body, such as syphilis, and it can progress to something like neurosyphilis, which could be absolutely devastating. Mm-hmm. Before perhaps the person's even really truly aware or have been diagnosed with it. So, if you're engaging in high risk behavior, I think certainly it would behoove you to discuss what you should do with your treating provider regarding testing and so forth, so that you can be properly treated for any one of these conditions.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of parents, I'm a parent, Dr. Sharon. What would you recommend parents, in terms of educating their children, in terms of protecting themselves and others that they know? I know that's a tough, maybe a tough question.
Well, it varies very much. Any parent is going to have their own beliefs and what's moral and ethical to do. A parent may really want to tell their child, based on their religion or other beliefs that, no sex out until or outside of marriage. That would certainly be one way to prevent it. But if you don't believe that that is what the message you want to give your child, certainly then you want to talk about risk reduction, reducing number of partners. And again, I can't say enough times, barrier protection is one of your best weapons in preventing acquiring any STD.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're almost out of time. So if people want more information on HIV, AIDS, sexually transmitted diseases, or even to reach out to you, where do they go and how do they do that?
Well, certainly the Ulster County Department of Health would be a place to go. The county does have sexually transmitted disease clinics, but I would advise anyone who is a primary care doctor, if they have these concerns, to bring it up with the primary care doctor and, let them know they're concerned about this and are interested in testing and more knowledge about this.
Mm-hmm. There's probably a lot of information on the CDC website.
Absolutely. CDC, the New York State Department of Health, all of these resources have a lot of information available.
How do they get in touch with you?
My office number is listed in the phone book. You can call me or make an appointment to see us there.
Mm-hmm. And your practice again is?
The Medical Associates of the Hudson Valley.
Great. Well, we're almost out of time. Actually, we are out of time. So thank you so much
for the great work you do,
Dr. Sharon, and your colleagues. And that's all the time we have. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a community affairs presentation from the Ulster County Health Department, sponsored by Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley in Kingston, a member of the WMC Health Network. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next week.